welcome to episode 20 of the Dork Web Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Locchiato, and I'm joined by my venerable co-host, Mr. Evan Rakowski.
Still not in the dreadnought yet, but I am venerable.
You know, I'm hoping that at the start of one of these episodes, I get to introduce you, and there's just like a crash from behind me, and rubble's falling, and you just come in, and you're just like, what's up, J-Lo?
Even in death, I am still the podcast.
Yeah, all these Warhammer references.
That we won't talk about on this podcast, yeah. But we're thinking about doing another one.
Sure, sure. Don't want to mix the oil and the water.
No.
But hey, man, it's been a while. Last podcast I was with Billy. You just missed him.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I enjoy watching DC stuff with him.
Sure. So, you probably know we did some Swamp Thing, and that was awesome. But glad to have you back.
Good to be back, Jonathan.
It is good to be back, because we actually have a little bit of news to discuss before we get into the main topic of our podcast today. So obviously, as I mentioned before, we took a little bit of time off, whole bunch of stuff going on, but specifically for me, got my wisdom teeth out and needed some time not talking and worrying about all this stuff. But hey, now that we're here, we're going to catch up on some of the stuff that we missed. First and foremost, obviously, we cover video games pretty regularly, I'd say. Not the main attraction of the show all the time, but something that we talk about. And what have we recently taken up that we used to fight off with garlic and steaks?
So it's definitely been a strange set of turns. I don't know what you'd call it. But we have gotten back into playing Destiny 2.
Yes.
Because after a long period of time looking for a game like Destiny, we just couldn't find it. I mean, we want like a sci-fi co-op shooter with some RPG elements. And unfortunately, Destiny 2 is kind of the only thing we'd like to play in that kind of market.
That's like at least solid enough and with enough to do. And I use that pretty sparingly, you know, to keep you engaged. But without spending a ton of time talking about this, the dream that I've often brought up when I've talked about sci-fi shooters or just shooters in general is a sci-fi shooter that you can play with your friends, has a great story. So, you know, you could play it solo if you wanted, but even better with your friends. Almost like, you know, how cooperative multiplayer Halo was with some of the later games. But also those nice kind of like pseudo MMO elements of being able to run around in a big open space, a big open world, and do stuff together that isn't so linear, like raids or, you know, a weekend event or something like that. And yeah, as Evan said, Destiny is probably the best case scenario for that right now. But important information for both me and I think for you as well, Evan, is that we've only bought the base game. And we are riding the rails as two homeless guys with sticks and sacks with our belongings in them, just, you know, taking the United States transit system for all it's worth.
Yes, the romanticism of the ye olde American hobo.
Yeah, of paying for a game once and then getting all the content.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're just old and we have different ideas about what games should be, but I don't know. If I buy a game once, that should be it. I'm not there to like buy it multiple times throughout its life cycle. You know,
you're speaking, of course, of Skyrim.
Yeah, or Skyrim or any of the Destinies. Because, you know, $60 is enough. And if I pay another $60, I shouldn't just get like piecemeal DLC.
Sure.
But yeah.
And some of that DLC sucks.
Yeah, like I think it was like the Curse of Osiris and Warmind. I mean, Warmind's pretty cool. You know, I like my machine gods.
And even just in games in general, like, you know, a recent example was Spider-Man, like Sony's Spider-Man. DLC wasn't that great. Like, it was, you know, interesting and, you know, playable, but there were, like, weird problems with it, and, like, cutscenes would get skipped because they'd be playing while it was still loading into the cutscene. So it would, like, start the cutscene halfway through because it was in a loading screen. It was, I don't know, just, like, weird stuff.
Yeah, that DLC felt very disjointed when I was watching you play it. Yeah. Like, are there cutscenes in this?
Yeah, but at any rate, another thing that has been catching people's eye, I know you've talked to me about it a few times, is that oh no, I'm blanking on the name. Go ahead, jump in and save me. That game that is like Dark Souls.
Yes, the one I keep trying to get you to get with me. It's right. called Remnant from the Ashes, or From Ashes, I believe.
Yes.
A very forgettable title. However, it's a pretty unique game, and a lot of people are taking a shine to it.
Sure. Why don't you give some folks the rundown on what that game entails?
So it plays a lot like if you combined kind of the third-person combat of Gears of War with the weight and difficulty of Dark Souls. So, you know, you have your invul frames while dodging, you know, different levels of encumbrance with armor, upgradable weapons, gear you can find and craft, you know, to that vein. And
but you're hiding behind things and blowing people's heads off.
Yeah, there's no cover system.
Ah.
It's just, running, shooting, and rolling and dodging and meleeing occasionally. There's, I think there's like three classes in it. There's like, you know, like the range class, there's like the cultist class, which can do some like healing and stuff, and then there's like, you know, the tank class, who can take a bit more damage, has better armor, and can do more melee damage. And the thing is with this game, like the guns, you can do friendly fire, but with melee you don't do friendly fire, so that I guess that's a good way to clear some trash without shooting each other and saving bullets for, like, you know, the more difficult enemies and the bosses, because ammo can be scarce in that game.
Sure, or else it wouldn't be difficult.
Yeah, so I know it's going to be taking you a bit more convincing to get, but it's only $3.99 on the Steam store.
$39.99.
Yeah, $39.99 in the Steam store, and it's got some pretty good reviews. So if that seems like a game you'd like, I'd definitely check it out, maybe watch some YouTube videos. It's pretty cool.
Yes, and maybe one day you will convince me wholly to buy it.
Yes.
My biggest reservation is it just looks a little generic, and I kind of feel like, you know, this is the first introduction of white bread, and soon enough, a more robust, better financed company will be like, oh, that's a great idea. Why don't we just make it better? Kind of like how the single player game that I'm just playing the crap out of right now is Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And, you know, that very much took a lot of the elements from the Nemesis system that Lord of the Rings Shadow of Mordor made. And a lot of those elements are in Assassin's Creed Odyssey with, like, the mercenaries that hunt you.
Oh, yeah.
And them having specific weaknesses. And they're all, like, named NPCs that, like, do, you know, behave certain ways and do certain things.
Globthok, the Flesh Eater.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, you know, I'm never playing Shadow of War because, you know, reasons. But I really liked the Nemesis system. And it's like, hey, if another company is going to pick that up, wait. Same company? Different company?
I don't think Ubisoft. No, Ubisoft did not do Shadow of War or Shadow of Mordor.
That was EA.
EA did not do those. I think it was maybe Monolith or something.
Okay. At any rate, happy that somebody else is taking that idea and fleshing it out in a way that suits their games, because it works really well. Yeah. And I've just looking... last night, I think I have like almost 90 hours in that game, yeah. And I'm still not done.
And it doesn't crap on the previously established canon of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and it doesn't, yeah, just shit all over your favorite book and movie franchise.
And then Shelob turned into a sexy lady.
Right, right. So that's what I've been doing single player wise. Have you been playing anything single player?
Let's see. Single player. No, not really. Just playing Destiny. Shooting? We've been shooting. Playing Destiny, shooting.
Red Dead?
Oh, yes. I have been playing Red Dead single player. Sorry.
I was pantomiming. You were pantomiming. From across the table.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed that.
Doing two guns with my hands.
Red Dead's really fun because you can kind of play it any way you want. Like, I basically have been going through this game playing, almost kind of RPing as Revolver Ocelot. You know, Duster Coat.
The thrill of reloading in battle.
And just solely using, one or two, because there is dual wielding in this, Colt single action armies, which takes some skill to use. And you can also dual wield the, sawed-off shotgun, so I was doing a bit of Metal Gear 5 Ocelot with the shotgun pistols.
Sure.
But, the story is great. Like, it's a very good Rockstar narrative.
Heard it's a very cinematic game.
It is incredibly cinematic. It's almost like playing a movie.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
Very cool. So, one more piece of news that I want to touch upon is Spider-Man and Sony and Marvel.
Yeah.
And the whole situation with movies. So, obviously, during the last month or so, some information has come to light between the money and the deals and the grease that, you know, moves the wheels.
The cutthroat corporate environment.
Yeah, between Marvel and Sony. Between Marvel and Sony.
Marvel, get my butts.
Yeah. But between Marvel and Sony. And as it stands right now, as of this recording, they've pretty much officially said, you know, hey, we've ended talks. We couldn't come to an agreement. There was some issue over money at the end of the day. And depending on which side you're on, you could see both Sony at fault or you could see Marvel at fault. So I'm not going to focus too much on who's at fault and who's right and who's not. But what we know for certain is that the next Spider-Man movie is not going to be tied into the MCU. And obviously this inspired like freakouts across the web. I think you even sent me an article right when it happened.
A lot of people were like considering this the end of like Tom Holland's MCU career.
Sure, sure. But looking a little bit deeper into the situation, like Tom Holland and the director that they've been using.
Great guys.
Great guys. And they're still signed on, I think, for two more movies, if not to 100% one. So, you know, Tom Holland isn't getting replaced. They're not rebooting the MCU. Like, they're not rebooting Spider-Man from the MCU version. And they're not, like, you know, gutting the team that made those first movies happen. The biggest change is that, you know, as far as things that belong to the MCU, probably being like Pepper Potts and Happy are not going to be in the next Spider-Man movie, as well as any of the other Marvel heroes that he's been in other movies with.
Which is strange, because the only thing that's being changed is Kevin Feige is no longer the producer. That was the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's the big thing. But he's that's the other part of it, is a lot of people attribute all of these Marvel movies to, you know, the vision of Kevin Feige, which, yeah, I mean, he's been doing excellent work. But if you're still keeping so much of the team, I think the biggest difference here is really just that
you're not getting the money from the same guy.
You're not getting the money from the same guy, and you're not having that same guy with the money, like, walking the set and being like, yep, this is the way the money should be spent, you know, being spent.
Essentially,
like,
being, you know, the control.
Yeah, like, this is up to my standards. Does that mean that Sony's not going to be able to put together a great Spider-Man movie with most of the same cast?
We all saw Venom.
I know.
However, this does lead to a higher probability that the next Spider-Man arc will involve Venom.
It does.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, and I think a cool thing about that is I was just doing a little, you know, thought plotting. And
you mean meditating?
Yeah, I rolled my eyes into the back of my head. I was driving, you know, I just stopped paying attention and just started thinking. And what I realized is it would be very easy for Venom 2 to come out and have Carnage in it, which we know is going to happen.
There'll be Carnage.
Yeah, exactly that. And for there to be a cameo of Spider-Man or end credit scene of Spider-Man showing up or Eddie Brock going back to New York, and then for the next Spider-Man movie to either not be named a Spider-Man movie but to be named like a Carnage movie, or to be called like Maximum Carnage or whatever they want to call it, or be called a Spider-Man movie but be a team up between Spider-Man and Venom,
the best frenemies.
Yes. And, you know, taking this little mind plot a little bit further is, you know, knowing that they've said that at least for the next movie, talks are off and that this is going to be their project, that doesn't mean the door is closed. And this could be a way for Sony to kind of just solidify the exchange between and the team up between Spider-Man and Venom as their movie, not involving Marvel.
Ooh.
And like, that is a very financially smart thing to do, so that Marvel's not getting a huge cut out of you know, half of a property that, you know, they kind of did a lot of the work on.
Yeah.
And again, you know, not to say that one person should do this and one person should do that, one company's right, one company's wrong, but I think that as far as the argument goes that this version of Spider-Man needs the support of the greater MCU to be successful is completely false. I won't spoil anything, but obviously if you've seen Spider-Man Far From Home, then you know that there's enough going on in that universe by the time the last end credits scene plays that a whole movie just about Spider-Man, his supporting class in the city, and everybody involved, especially if you're throwing in Venom and Carnage and those kind of antics.
Lethal Protector.
Yeah, like you can totally carry that without the need to have anybody else included.
Yeah, maybe Venom would have a reason to go after Spider-Man and be like, you did that and you killed all the people with the drones and you're a bad person.
Maybe, or maybe he's like, oh dang, in Venom 2, I fought Carnage and lost, I need your help.
He's still Eddie Brock, investigative reporter, so he'll probably find out the truth about Spider-Man and like come to his aid as Venom.
I mean, everybody knows the truth at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think the future for Spider-Man is bleak.
Doesn't involve Kevin Feige.
Yeah, and I think that's still going to be great, still going to be interesting. And maybe it will be the thing that actually makes Venom good, if that's what this is leading to.
Oof.
Yeah, shots fired.
Yeah. You just have to make sure you don't get a complete clown as the next producer.
Yeah, but I guess time will tell, and that's probably as close to a prediction that I'll make on the subject. And as news comes, we will deliver it to you here.
Yes, at the Dorknet.
The Dorknet.
Yeah, that's the next evolution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here in the Dork Cave, you know, being with our multiple media feeds,
right,
wiring like the Batcave.
Exactly, and the Dork Webmobile.
Soon to be Dork Webmobile.
Yeah, it's actually just a vehicle made out of webs. It's the Dork Webmobile.
Yeah, we actually had a deal with Sony and Spider-Man.
Right. So we're going to talk about the main subject of the podcast today.
Yes.
The Nickelodeon revival revolution on Netflix. NRRN.
It's a very interesting thing.
Yes. So for those of you who don't know, Netflix has put out both an Invader Zim movie and a Rocko's Modern Life movie recently, all within the same month, I think within a couple weeks of each other. But I think like right out of the gates, the first thing to say about these is they feel like long episodes.
Yeah, like the best thing about these, watching both of them, they don't feel like movies. As in like, you know, a movie would usually have its own plot and be self-contained. These just kind of felt like another episode, just like a really long, good episode that was very, you know, self-referential and true to the lore of the show.
Yeah, like Rocko's Modern Life is 45 minutes, and Invader Zim, it was a little over an hour. I don't think it quite made it to an hour and a half. But
it's a good hour, though.
But it was good, yeah, both were good. So let's talk about one and then the other, so we can start by talking about Invader Zim. Enter the Florpus.
Yes, that is the full title. Invader Zim, Enter the Florpus.
Yes. How did you feel about that?
I really liked it. Yeah. So while watching it, sometimes the humor kind of felt a bit much and kind of like too random and like too wacky. But then I remember back to Invader Zim, and that's what everyone loved about it. And that's what made Invader
so random.
Yeah, and that's what made Invader Zim was just the complete insanity of it all.
Literally.
And it definitely lived up to that.
Yeah, I think that it evolved pretty well because Dib's dad basically runs a giant tech company.
Like Apple.
Yeah, that's selling like watches and
membrane watches or something with like a weird alien slime in it.
Yeah, well, Zim puts that in.
Yeah.
But they're selling like all this different technology, like consumer technology.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like very referential of society today. Whereas, you know, obviously this cartoon was coming out over a decade ago. It was like different ideals and like smartphones weren't a thing and personal computing wasn't a thing like, you know, like how it is now.
Yeah.
So like the evolution of the world, they handled very well. And like the characters, even though they're the same age,
yeah,
and all that stuff, like they kind of give they let you know what they've been doing.
Yeah, like a period of time has passed in the show.
Yeah.
Dib became a like dungeon neckbeard.
Yeah, in
became,
his chair.
Yeah, became fused to his chair and became, you know, obese and diseased. It was pretty graphic.
Oh, yeah.
And Zim was hiding in a toilet.
Yep.
Laughing maniacally. How long was it? Like 12 months or 12 years?
It was a long time.
Yeah.
Long enough.
But no one aged.
No one aged, no. And I don't want to give too much away about the plot, but it's...
It was just another episode of Invader Zim. If you've seen any episode of Invader Zim, the plot will feel familiar.
Yeah.
Because it follows the exact same arc as every episode.
Yeah, but just fleshed out.
Yeah, just more fleshed out.
And there's definitely, I think, a stronger focus on... Well, Invader Zim's always been good about having just, like, random side characters that are there for, like, an episode.
Yeah.
And that was there. Clembrain.
Yes.
We gotta talk about Clembrain.
The horrible failed clone. Wasn't he in an episode? Or...
I don't think so.
Probably not. But, yeah, Clembrain's just kind of, like, a weird lobotomized mutant clone of Professor Membrane that Zim came up with, like, to replace his father.
And also is, like, oh, very fish-like.
Yeah. But except he's... He looks fish-like, but it's kind of more disturbing that he's not a fish and just kind of like a man.
Yes.
A mutant man.
Yes.
Who's very, very stupid.
Yes, and loves pudding.
Oh, yeah. He has pudding-based science.
Of course, everything can be solved with pudding. There's also plenty of good references to things that have happened in the show before, like the spaceship.
Oh, yeah, the belonging to Jim
Tack.
Or Tack?
Tack.
Tack.
Tack. Yes. And they definitely pick up on the greater Urken Armada and let you know what's going on there.
Oh, yes. Multiple conversations with Zim and the Tall Ones, as they're called.
Yes, the Tallest.
The Tallest, who aren't exactly as cracked up as they were originally led to seem.
Well, they were always they're just kind of like dumb. Idiots. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just like drinking Slurpees and eating donuts.
And only going straight.
Yes.
A linear line through space.
Yes. It's an interesting ending, and I won't go into too much detail because if you have Netflix, you should definitely watch this. If you're an Invader Zim fan, you should definitely watch this. But the ending almost kind of like puts a pin in it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
A temporary pin, we could say. It could stay there. Well, I mean, temporary / permanent pin, depending on what they decide to do.
I guess depending on the direction they take it.
Yeah.
So, again, without spoiling anything, this could be, I guess, depending on, you know, the wishes of the creator and whether he wants to do any more work, this could be seen as like a final thing, you know, if he closes the book on it, or it could just be in that kind of Invader Zim episodic style, where it seems like the episode ends with these severe repercussions and then they're not actually...
Yeah, true. That was basically every episode where Zim almost destroys the planet or something and Zim stops him.
Replaces all of Dib's organs with, like, toys.
Oh, man, that was pretty gross.
That was a grotesque episode.
Yes. Also, there were plenty of good action sequences in that. And apparently...
Oh, and, like, different changes in animation.
Oh, yeah. We won't spoil what happens, but there is basically a point in time where they're going through animation changes, which is interesting to say at least. However... The action sequences, I'll just say that apparently Dib's father is Genos from One Punch Man and has like crazy cyborg arm cannons.
That's what you would want, I think.
That's what I want when I'm a cyborg.
Sure. So, all in all, recommend, not recommend?
Two thumbs, way up, like Hades.
Wow. Same.
Yeah.
It was good. Again, check it out if you like those things. Invader Zim, Nickelodeon, cartoons, trippy cartoons. Any of those. But that brings us to our other point, or our other thing to discuss.
Rocco's Modern Life.
Yes. So this guy was a little bit shorter, and I don't know if it came out first or second. I think it came out first. I think it came out first.
It was definitely, I guess we can already say it, it's the most progressive cartoon I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, it's woke.
It's woke AF.
Yes. And there's definitely something that makes this so woke that is very much in spoiler territory. So I will not spoil it considering this is still relatively new. And again, you should go and watch it, especially considering it's just about 45 minutes. And like the perfect short little thing that's also a movie, so totally self-contained. But it picks up with Rocco and crew in space, and they have been
drifting in space for like 20 years or
something. Drifting in space for 20 years, and then they make it back to Earth, and there's smartphones and
vegan chicken places.
Vegan chicken, like all these, you know, everything that exists now.
It's very, I don't know if I'd call it forced, but it's almost kind of just like, it's not very creative social commentary where it's just like, oh, it's Apple, oh, it's Starbucks. Yeah. Look at all this stuff. It's Monster Energy Drink.
But I think that's important.
And I believe that is important.
It's intentional.
Yeah, it's definitely,
because it makes the latter part of the movie take you by surprise.
You're right. It basically is setting the stage of contemporary culture.
Yes.
Which is, as you can say,
also a very
centric to the plot.
Yeah, and in the way that it's setting this, the social
dynamics.
Scene. Yeah, the social scene and social dynamics. It's doing so like loud and abruptively, and like bam, like reference to this, and bam, reference to that.
Yeah, and it's essentially shocking Rocco because in the beginning act of this, Rocco was dealing with literal culture shock. Because, you know, he's been in space for 20 years and he comes back to the planet and nothing is as he remembers it. And he hates everything and he's miserable.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, and that's essentially the start of this show.
Basically. And he goes on a journey to try and, you know, basically find something and bring something that he once had in 20 years ago into modern day. And that's kind of the basis for this movie episode.
Yeah, it's strange because it's very self-referential to itself because what he is doing.
And it talks about like fandom and.
Yeah, he is essentially, he is going on a journey to find a cartoonist who made this cartoon he loved and to basically bring it back because it's the only thing he wants back from his old life. And he's looking towards this bottled nostalgia as essentially his cure-all for what ails him.
Yeah.
You know, like looking towards the past with rose-tinted glasses because you don't want anything today because everything today is too different or too scary.
And
that's really what the show is, what it's about.
Yeah, and, you know, will he find what he desires? Will he feel better? You'll have to find out yourself.
Yeah, we could talk for, like, a long time about this particular movie because, like, while Invader Zim was good, Rocco's Modern Life, its story was a lot more mature than Invader Zim, which isn't,
yeah,
I mean, it's Invader
Zim. I would agree.
Yeah. It's not hard, but very mature, very modern, and it just has a good message.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I don't think we can go too much more into detail without, I guess, kind of revealing some of the more intimate details about the movie, so I don't want to do that, but
It's a movie about itself.
It's a movie about itself, and anybody who grew up watching that show
will love it.
And a lot of people who I think fall into
boomer category.
No. A lot of people who fall into, I guess, kind of like the early 20s to like early 30s age.
Millennials.
Sure. I think that a lot of those people will get the most out of this. That's not to say it's not a good movie for anybody else who wants to watch it, but just that I think that it holds more weight if you were growing up around the same time where Rocco left.
You are the targeted audience in that case.
Right. So you obviously like this movie a lot more. So what is it, 4 thumbs?
I mean, I only have 2 thumbs, so I'll flex my toes, and now we got 2 big toes up as well as 2 thumbs.
Wow. Yeah, I liked this a lot as well, so I don't know if I can pick favorites, but I could definitely say that I could watch Rocco's Modern Life more, especially because it's shorter and more digestible. It's just like an episode.
I can understand that, but I'd also kind of, I wouldn't separate them. I'd keep them together. Like, if I were to put them on like a DVD,
I'd
put them together as, like, you know, like a full special of, you know, oh, one short movie and another short movie.
Sure. Excellent. hopefully there is something more to come from this Nickelodeon Netflix team up.
Yeah, it's definitely enjoyable from, you know, what we've experienced.
And beneficial to them, it seems. You know, considering Disney has their own app now, and they're going to be able to put out all their Marvel stuff, all their Disney movies, all their Disney shows, all that stuff. Netflix isn't really going to have any of, or a lot of that content coming their way anymore. So I think that, you know, partnering up with Nickelodeon could be a pretty smart move, and especially if they're making stuff like this, you know, with the original creators and with the people who were involved with, you know, as much ability to that as they can possibly muster, then they're going to hopefully make some good stuff if this is any indication. And I'd love to see an Ed, Edd, and Eddie. No, I'm thinking about Ed, Edd, and Eddie, but I would love to see Real Monsters.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Or Angry Beavers.
Yeah, if those two came back in a capacity, I think that would be bananas.
Oh, what if they did the Rugrats All Grown Up? Oh, wait, they did.
Oh, no. No.
They did.
They need to do Rugrats. Oh, no, we've become too young again.
Yeah. It's like, oh, God, we fell in the time goop, and now we're infants.
We got locked in Chucky's secret lab, and, we became...
Yeah, Chucky's dad is trying to bring back his dead wife, and accidentally...
Hijinks ensue.
Yeah, hijinks ensue. Oh, man, that's sad.
Yeah, so hopefully that's what we have to look forward to in the future. However, as we begin to draw the curtain on this episode... There is something that I spy on the horizon.
Yep, I think I see it too.
It is season two of Titans making its way. It's beelining towards us. In fact, I think some of it's already here, episode one.
Oh man, can you hear that? I hear this high-pitched whine and just, you know, a loud heart beating.
Mm.
Actually, no, that's me. I'm suffering post-traumatic stress disorder.
Sure. So, you know... If you know us, you know how much we hated Titans season one.
Oh, it was literally the worst TV show I've ever seen.
And now we got season two coming fast.
I don't know how they can make it worse, but at the same time, I won't be surprised if it is.
Yeah, just from some of the... Like, I haven't watched the first episode yet. Hopefully digging into that soon. We want to get Billy here. I think he'll make an appearance on the show again to talk about it. But I also want to watch... at least half of the show before we make an episode about it so that we can make a pretty fair judgment call, because I don't want to make an episode, you know, every 2 weeks after we watch two episodes, so that it's a little bit more concise. But just from some of the stuff I've seen, like images, doesn't look too great. Looks like Terra has an eye patch.
Yeah, Terra. So, Yeah, Terra seems to be a woman with, like, long white hair, like, long fluffy white hair and an eye patch on the opposite eye of Slade.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of only see Slade in the background in his outfit, but even that looks kind of dumb.
Mm.
So,
Oh, yeah.
Don't know what they're thinking.
And we got Superboy and Crypto. Yep.
Yep.
Well.
I'll just stick with Young Justice, which is, you know, but good.
Yeah. So, soon, folks, soon we will go to battle again with our nemesis. But until then...
The eternal hated foe.
The eternal hated foe of Titans.
Old One Eye.
That's right. But until then, thank you all for listening. That's going to bring episode 20 to a close. As always, you can get in touch with us by emailing at thedorkwebpodcast@gmail.com. You can visit our website, thedorkweb.net, and... as well as Instagram and Facebook, is The Dork Web and The Dork Web Podcast. Thank you oh so much.
And who knows, maybe one day we'll do the raffle on those Forge World figures we got from...
We put them up right after the convention,
yes.
And nobody entered.
Oh, well, so we're going to have to do it again.
I take it back. One person entered, and I sent them the thing that they got.
Okay.
But it wasn't a raffle.
It was more like, hey, like I heard you were giving away free stuff. It's like, well, you're the one who showed up.
You're getting the free stuff then. However, that's going to bring us to a close tonight. And thank you oh so much.
Remember how generous we are.
Yes.